You're listening to the OCD Stories podcast, hosted by me, Stuart Ralph. The OCD Stories is a podcast dedicated to raising awareness and understanding around obsessive compulsive symptoms. I do this through interviewing inspired therapists, psychologists, and people who have experienced OCD. Welcome to the OCD Stories. And welcome to episode 323 of the podcast. And in this one, I chat with Meredith about her OCD story. And in particular, she goes into sexual orientation themed OCD. We discuss medication, the tough time she had going to general inpatient treatment, how her OCD symptoms were impacting her relationships, support groups, creating a bespoke support system, her experience of exposure and response prevention therapy, how her family learned to not reassure her when she was compulsively asking for reassurance. She talks about TMS for her depression, exercise and meditation, as well as much, much more. Really moving story from Meredith. And thank you to NoCD for supporting the podcast. NoCD offers affordable, effective and convenient therapy available in the US and outside the US. To find out more about NoCD, their therapy plans, if they currently take your insurance, or to download their free app, head over to go.treatmyocd.com/theOCDstories, or the link will be in the episode description. So thank you to Meredith for sharing her story, and of course, thank you to you guys. As always, I deeply appreciate it. And without further ado, here is Meredith. Welcome to the show, Meredith.
Thank you. Very excited to be here. I'm a little nervous, but excited. More excited than nervous.
Good, good. And it's okay to be nervous and do it anyway, right?
Yep.
So, I'd love to hear your OCD story, and you can share as little or as much detail as you want.
Okay. So I feel like everybody starts with everybody realizes and knows exactly when and where they were when it started. I feel like that's a big theme, or not theme, but a commonality when I listen to your podcast. It's everybody's like, I was here. This is when it happened, and they know exactly when it started. And I was in high school. I think I was a junior, so it was about, God, it was like 25 years ago. Hmm. I was a junior in high school, and I was in math class, and I was getting ready to leave. I was standing in the doorway, and I had a thought, what if I'm gay? And that just stuck. Like nothing has ever stuck before. I've never had anything stick like that. And it just kept going and going and going and going and growing. And I didn't know how to deal with it. The anxiety was so bad that I kept seeking reassurance. I mean, I'd have the same conversation over with my mom over and over. I would tell her, it's almost like too, I think when you're that age, you're scared of what people are going to think of you, you know? So, you know, being gay would be different, and, you know, are people going to like me or not, you know? And so I always thought like, well, what if it was always, what if I was? And I would say that to my mom. I'm having this thought, what if I'm gay? And she would always say to me, and I'll never forget this, but she'd go, well, are you? And I'd go, no. And she goes, okay. And then I'd go, well, what if I am? And she's like, then we would deal with it. And I'm like, okay. But what if I am? And it was just this, it was just this circle that, like, yeah. Now looking back, you know, I'm thinking to myself, first, because I'm a mom, how did my mom get through that? You know, I mean, that's just, and it, like I said, it was just this repetitive reassurance, anxiety, the reassurance would go, you know, I'd get the reassurance, the anxiety would go down a little bit. I'd get the reassurance again, and just this circle. And then it started, I would ask my friend, I would tell my girlfriends at the time, you know, I'd say to them, what if I'm gay? And I'm having these thoughts, what if I'm gay? And they'd look at me and say, are you? And I'm like, no. And everybody was like, okay. And everybody said to me, and if you were, it'd be okay. But that, for whatever reason, wasn't enough. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah,
but
it does.
It just, So that's what triggered. That was like the triggering moment. It was my junior year. And it kind of, you know, I was withdrawn from my friends. I think, you know, I don't know my parents, I mean, it's 24, 25 years ago. So, you know, I don't know how prevalent OCD was back then, which is kind of crazy to think now. I feel like an old lady. Hmm. But my mom took me to a psychiatrist, and I'll never forget it. I was sitting there with him, and he basically told me, there's nothing we can do. This is something you're going to have to deal with for the rest of your life. And yeah. And as a 17-year-old, that just threw me into, I was like, how am I supposed to live like this? I can't live like this. So fast forward, you know, I got a good, they found me a different psychiatrist, I think, or maybe it was the same one, but they got me on Prozac. And thank God that helped. Mm-hmm. It went away.
Oh.
Yeah. I don't know. And I don't, probably ERP back then wasn't a thing. Maybe
it was a thing. Yeah. It was just less widespread. Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, I mean, but I don't think anybody here where I live knew about it. I mean, today, even finding somebody that specializes in OCD it's not easy.
Hmm. Also, so in the 90s, you didn't have the internet, at least not widespread. So you couldn't even search.
No. So I think, you know, I think my mom was in the dark. I think my dad was in the dark. You know, I think, you know, my friends were probably like, what the hell's going on with her? You know, but like I said, it was medication. And I don't remember if I saw a therapist or not. I did later on. So that kind of was, you know, I graduated high school, and I'll kind of give you go into what happened last year. But, you know, OCD has always been present in my life through anxiety, through reassurance, through thoughts. And it's something that I've always stuffed down and just ignored or tried to ignore the best I can. In my 20s, I did a lot of binge drinking to deal with it. And that was a terrible cycle of, I would go out. I was uncomfortable with myself. So I would go out. I would drink a ton. I'd more or less black out, not know what I did. Next morning, wake up with regret. And that almost, oh God, what did I do? And somebody with OCD, you know, did I do this? Did I do that? I mean, it was just this terrible feeling of like self-loathing and doubt. And I just didn't feel like a good person, I guess. And then I would continue to do that cycle over again. So the reassurance kind of was with the drinking. It got me through my 20s. I have developed, you know, there's also an eating disorder part of it with OCD. That is, you know, under control, but that has always been a little bit present because it's that control piece. You know, so I would say my 20s were tough. It's like, it kind of started in high school, and then my 20s, you know, I never lost a job. I never, you know, I could function. I was a functioning person with anxiety, and I had some depression, and I had the OCD, but it was never like what happened last year. So fast forward. In my 30s, my early 30s, I met my husband, had a kid, great life. I'm still on medication. I'm seeing my therapist. you know, it's there. OCD is there, but I have the tools on how to deal with it. And, you know, I can handle it. It's manageable. Yeah. And the pandemic hits. So throughout the pandemic, while it was a terrible thing and, you know, it was so unknown what was happening into the entire world, it was a really amazing time for me and my family. We kind of all, we bonded a lot. It was a lot of getting together, a lot of family time. We were outside a lot of laughs. Just, I think a lot of people feel this way, but it's something that I will cherish out of that pandemic. There was nothing to do. So we were all forced to be together and it was pretty great. Sidebar, I did stop drinking. Okay. So there was a time where I stopped drinking in my late 20s to present. So pandemic happens, you know, world's on fire, but everything's good in my world with my family. We're doing our thing. We're loving life. We're hanging out outside. You know, I started to drink a little bit just because there's nothing to do.
Yeah.
We had a great time. So that was in 2020. 2021, you know, kind of going through the motions of same thing, you know, trying to get used to the quote unquote new normal, what's going on. And for whatever reason, I just feel like that's kind of when it all started to implode. I don't know if it was drinking that had a part to do with it. But it was November of 2021. I was getting a massage and I had a thought and it would not go away. And it was like back in high school, it spun and spun and spun. And I was seeing a therapist, or my current therapist, who I love and adore. I've seen her for 10 years. You know, she tried to help me, but I gradually from November, 2021, December, and then January, when did the pandemic happen?
March 2020 was like the first lockdowns, at least in the US and UK.
Okay, so then back up. I apologize, I skipped a year. When the pandemic happened, like that spring and summer is when it was like fun and we had a great time. Okay. It was in November of 2020 where I started to decline. This is where it starts to get very, very foggy for me, obviously. So in November of 2020, I had this thought and I couldn't let it go. It was causing me distress, anxiety. I was trying to seek reassurance. I know what to do, but I just, you know, you get that reassurance. You feel so good for 10 minutes, an hour, a day, whatever. And then you don't get it back and you feed it. It grows and it grows and it grows and it grows. And I think I could manage it, but I also think there was a piece of, there was a lot of depression going on. So if November, 2020, December, 2020, I just slowly went downhill. It was like, I would have panic attacks at work. I couldn't get out of bed. I just kept having these thoughts that were crippling, that my husband didn't really understand because it's not like he was really exposed to this. As far as at least this intensely exposed to it. It was tough. And then in May of 2021, I felt like too, the other part of it that was, I felt like I couldn't get any help. I had my therapist, But the the medication portion of it, you know, the person that I was seeing at the time was very unresponsive. And I think with the pandemic, you know, a lot of stuff was done by email. It was like, I don't know, I'm not that type of person. It's like, I need somebody to talk to. I want to see somebody, you know. So I think that losing that human connection was hard. And it just kept getting worse and worse and worse. And my dad found, through a friend of a friend, found a psychiatrist that, thank God, was willing to take me on. Because, you know, nowadays, everybody's booked. Okay. And that man, Dr. F, saved my life along with my psychologist. He jumped right in and he just was there for me every single step of the way. And I'll get more to that. But in May of 2021, I was admitted to the hospital, for psychiatric issues. And I was there for 8 days. And I have to say, looking back on it, like, I don't really think it did anything. You know, they put you in the hospital and it's kind of like, for what?
Yeah.
You know, I sat in a hospital bed and I don't know. I was away from my family. And so I got out of the hospital and I was okay. And they referred me, and when I say okay, I was doing the best I could. And I got out and they referred me to an outpatient program through the hospital for like intense therapy for 2 weeks. And I went, and on my first day, it was a room with a big screen and it was all virtual. And I was sitting alone at a desk looking at a computer screen with like 10 other people. And that, to me, was also so depressing because there's not that connection. And I couldn't stop crying. And if I sound like I'm kind of all over the place, it's because at that point in my life, everything was all over the place. So I couldn't stop crying when I went to that. It was like the second time that I had been to the outpatient program, and I more or less lost it. And they actually took me by ambulance from there to the hospital, and I was admitted into an inpatient. The first time I was in the hospital was not inpatient. It was on a psychiatric floor for people that have other medical issues, because I had happened to have COVID.
Okay.
At the time. So I was, in a way, I was kind of lucky. Like I had my cell phone. It wasn't, but going to inpatient was probably the scariest thing I've ever done in my life.
Yeah, I bet. Okay. Take your time.
You know, it's just, you're kind of locked. You know, there's a one phone on the wall. It just, it's something I never thought would happen to me.
Yeah.
But it did. And I have to say, like, again, I was admitted and I was there for 2 weeks and they didn't really do anything. I was on a lot of medication, to the point where I was more or less what's the word for it? Like a potato. I just, I was on so much medication, and my husband finally was like, we're done. This isn't helping her. This is making it worse. And he, my husband is a saint. He made the call and he was like, get her out of there. And they got me out and I was not okay. I still wasn't okay. The reassurance and the constant questioning of my husband and, you know, my mom and my sister and even my son, I have a 10-year-old, you know, it was detrimental to people. It was ruining my relationships. OCD was ruining my relationships with everybody around me, but I couldn't help it.
Yeah.
So this was in July and my family decided that for, you know, a month or so I would go live with my parents. So I wasn't around my child in terms of like, not that it wasn't like safe. It just, he didn't need to be exposed to the constant questioning because it was so out of control. I mean, I don't know if anybody with OCD, but I mean, I literally would have a thought and I felt like I had to confess everything to feel normal. And you know, I lived with them and it was brutal. I more or less had to like wean off the drugs. I saw my therapist like probably 3 or 4 times a week. You know, I will forever be grateful for my parents, for doing that. And then, you know, August came and it's, you know, and I worked with my therapist and I started really doing ERP, a lot of ERP. I was doing a support group, Dr. Lauren Wadsworth.
Yep.
She's been on. She has, Rochester. So I went to her practice and they have a support group and I was doing that 3 times a week. I was seeing my therapist 2 times a week. I was seeing my psychiatrist almost 1 or 2 times a week. I mean, it was, I was more or less doing an intense outpatient program myself because unfortunately in the hospital, it's ridiculous. And I can't even get into that. And then, you know, September, came along and I came home and it just slowly started to lift with the work. And, I had left the job I was working at. And I got a job at a florist shop, not something, you know, I had a career before this and, I got a job at a florist shop, something that I could just kind of go and be creative. And, that changed my life in terms of like, it was what I needed to get up every day and go and be surrounded by fresh flowers and be creative. And the people were amazing. And then, you know, slowly I'm, here I am and I'm okay.
Good.
You know, there's obviously a lot more into that, but I'm okay.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you for sharing and you know, a real journey you've been on and some real setbacks, but you're here, you know. And we'll talk about those in a minute, actually. But I guess what I really want to know, maybe the listeners will too, is so where you almost created your own intensive outpatient therapy program effectively, which is great. From that to where you are now, which is, you know, I'm sure you still got work to do, but you're a lot better compared to where you were. So what did that look like in terms of the amount of exposures you were doing at home, you know, between sessions and that type of thing? Just anything you want to share of Absolutely. How you turn that tide?
So when I started doing, so the outpatient, so the support group was 3 days a week and it was an hour a day. And it was kind of like we would meet, we'd talk for 20 minutes or so, and then we'd do about 20 minutes of ERP. And my ERPs were, I would take my thoughts and write them in a notebook. And I'd write them over and over and over and over and over. And I have notebooks. And it was like the entire summer, it was like, if I wanted to confess something to my mom or anybody, she would like, get your notebook. I don't want to hear it. Write it down and spend 20 minutes. And that's kind of how I learned to deal with it. Same with my therapist. So it was ERP like that 3 days a week. It was my therapist doing ERPs. And then more or less my family pushing me, you know, when I'd be like, okay, I'm seeking this reassurance. I need it. It was, you know, it took a lot. Cause I think when you don't understand OCD, it's easy to just give the reassurance and move on. But my family has now realized when I ask for that reassurance or when I want that answer, it's a very firm, I'm not engaging in this right now. And it shuts it off. Nice. That's a hard piece of OCD that I don't think people understand too. It's not the people's fault who you're living with or interacting with, but it's something hard for them to learn too.
Yeah.
You know, and my family is very, very good at now knowing to say, Meredith, we're not doing this. Because they know it's just going to create that circle. So it was a combination of me doing my intense outpatient stuff on my own, but then my family contributing. You know, my family contributing as well. I mean, I couldn't have my phone. I mean, there were times, you know, when I lived with my mom, over the summer, I mean, they took my phone away because I would try to call my husband and seek reassurance. I mean, he's trying to work.
Yeah.
And he's my husband and he's amazing. So he would pick up every time, you know, but that wasn't helping. And finally they just were like, it was just like kind of like cold turkey in a way. We got to shut this down. Mm-hmm. And we shut it down.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
It does. It's really good to hear. And yeah, you're right. It's also tough on the family members because the natural caring response is to give reassurance. But obviously, as we know with OCD, it doesn't help.
So, and that's the thing. Yeah. I think a huge part of OCD, and people don't realize, is what it can do to a family. It really can destroy a family. It's, you think that it's this, you know, depression and anxiety and, you know, just mental disorders, illnesses affect one person, and they don't. And I have to say, I am so lucky that I have a family and the support system of my friends and my family that, while they may not have understood it, they took the time to understand it. And did whatever they could to help be behind me, just like somebody who would have cancer and have to go to cancer treatments. It wasn't an option. It wasn't an option for me to not get up and get out of bed. It wasn't an option for me to lay around all day. it wasn't an option. It was, you know, my mom had me doing things, and I mean, I was so depressed. I mean, I would take walks. You know, they would force me to take a walk, and I mean, I don't know how any of, if you've ever been depressed, but putting one foot in front of the other is like, you can't do it. And I would take walks and I would think about throwing myself in front of a car because I just couldn't go on.
Yeah.
But the, I thought to myself, but I can't do that. I just can't do that. And, you know, I wanted it to be over so bad. You know, I would have done anything to get it over, to make it be over. You know, but I think, and my main reason that I wanted to be on this show is so people understand that it's not about, OCD is not about cleanliness. Part of it, but it's not hand washing all the time. Part of it, but I don't think people realize that if somebody has to wash their hands five times, they're really suffering, like big time.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, just OCD generally, well, we were talking about this before we started, about effectively the trauma of just having OCD for some people. Yeah. And how you think all these things which go against your nature, which are scary, and having to reconcile that. And then obviously just having to deal with compulsions and the decrease in quality of life and X, Y, Z. And there's a million things I'm going to not say and forget here. But then also you've got the horrible experience you had inpatient, right? Oh. And some people have wonderful inpatient experiences. I want to throw that out just to reassure anyone who's considering it.
Yeah, no, totally.
But
for sure.
For you, it was horrible. And it did more damage than good.
It was horrible. I mean, and, you know, I was in the emergency room probably 3 or 4 times.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then the inpatient, and yeah, it was, looking back on it, a therapist never came in to talk. You know, I would have a doctor that would come in and talk and basically talk about meds. I was basically doing my reassurance seeking every time I could get to the phone, you know, the stupid phone on the wall. It did nothing. And thank God my family said, get her out. The one thing that was researched when I did get out, and like I said, we had our own little intense OCD program, is, have you ever heard of TMS?
Yep.
Trans. Okay. I did that.
Okay.
I did that for 30 days. Because I think I mentioned I did have OCD, but the depression also was really big. So while they both were very large pieces, it kind of went up and down. If OCD was present, depression was down a little bit, then it would go the opposite way. And I did TMS. I found somebody here that does TMS, and I went every single day for 30 days. And they put me in that chair and they put that magnetic thing on my head, and I got tapped on the head for 17 minutes every day. And honestly, I think that helped the most.
For depression or for OCD?
So I think that helped with the depression. But I feel like once the depression goes down a little bit, the OCD goes down a little bit, you know, it's hard to tell. So I think that helped too. That was a big piece of it. So, you know, my family basically ran their own treatment program, which
was effective.
Thank God.
Yeah.
Thank God. You know, thank God. I am lucky that I have the support system that I have.
Hmm.
I really am.
Yeah. I mean, there's something to that about, as you say, they're like creating your own system of treatment, mm-hmm. be that finding a support group that works for you, finding, you know, advocates that put out useful content or therapists that put out useful content and consuming that, my podcast or whatever it is, like,
yeah,
finding that support system that works for you as an individual. Yeah.
That's what I mean. If I was feeling stuck, it almost got to a point too, where your podcast, I mean, I listened to your podcast every day last year, and it almost got to a point where my mom was like, all right, we might need to take a break.
Yeah.
You know, cause
yeah,
I was getting so into it, and she's like, you might be a little obsessed with this right now. Maybe kind of take, you know,
yeah.
Some of it can be intense. I mean, I commend some of the people that come on your show and really share it all. And it's a lot. It takes courage to do that, but
absolutely.
Your podcast, you know, your podcast has helped me tremendously.
Thank you.
Yeah. No, and I mean that. I mean, there's something to be said for being able to hear somebody say, I know what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I've been there. I've done that. You know, yeah. I've been in your situation. I know how it feels.
Yeah.
I feel for you. I'm sorry. There's something to be said for that. You don't want to be, I know it's, you know, you're not alone. And I know that sounds silly, but it's not. It's OCD can make you feel so alone.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And it's nice to know we're not alone.
Yeah. Well, that's just, it's human, right? It's anything. We need to know that we're not the only one with this hobby, as trivial as that is. You know, it's nice to meet someone else who supports the same team as you or whatever it is. You feel that connection and you feel the burden of life reduced slightly.
Yeah.
Okay, excellent. So, you know, we talked about obviously your family, which have been very helpful. We've talked about the different therapies, medication, etc. Is there anything else you do or that you need to make time for in your life that just helps generally with your well-being?
So right now, yeah. So I think it's funny when I get to a good place with my OCD. So right now, like I said, I'm in a really good spot. I'm in a good routine. I started a new job. I'm not at the flower shop anymore, but I love them and miss them. But I'm doing something that I've always wanted to do. Something that requires creativity, and you know, so there's that piece of it that I think I needed. So for me, I can't stress enough that, and I'm guilty of it, that I don't do it all the time. But exercise, going out and exercising, is that what you meant? Kind of like what I need.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. And like I said, I'm guilty of it. You get into a spot where you're comfortable, you know, I'm like, oh, I'm good. You know, I don't have to see my therapist 3 times a week and I'm not doing the support group anymore. And, you know, I see my psychologist, my psychiatrist once a month and he med checks me and, you know, I'm good. I don't have to do anything. We're good. And I have to remember that it's always going to be there. So I have to keep working at it day in and day out.
Hmm.
And if that means I have a thought that I want to get reassurance on, you know, the motto is shut your mouth. I just tell myself, shut your mouth. shut it. Keep it to yourself. And it goes away. So I kind of have to remind myself of that daily. I have to remember to get out and do something for myself and go on walks. Try to be more present. My sister is big into meditation. I'm trying to do that. Meditation is hard, but I have to say when I do it, I feel pretty darn good.
Yeah.
But every day I find myself, as long as I keep my mouth shut, that's an exposure and something that's helped to reduce the anxiety.
Yeah.
Does that work? Kind of what you
meant? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. That's excellent. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for sharing meditation. And yeah, like you said, it can be tough, but you've noticed for you a difference when it does help. Yeah, that's good. So I guess, you know, I want to know your words of hope for anyone listening who is in a tough situation, be it where you were, you know, a year or so ago or any other position.
So I want people to know that I think a lot of OCD sufferers are, we want instant gratification, right? My hands feel dirty, I gotta wash them and I gotta wash them again. Or I had this thought, I gotta tell somebody to make sure I'm not crazy. Or, you know, I have to check the doorknob. So, you know, we could go on and on and on and on. I want OCD sufferers to know that this isn't recovery in this. And I don't love the word recovery because I don't think you're ever going to recover from OCD. Just like my crappy psychiatrist in the 90s told me, this is, you know, this is it, you know.
Yeah.
Who tells that to a 17-year-old? I have no idea, but it's kind of true. So with that being said, I don't want to scare anybody. But this is something that we can learn to live with and be okay, because it does take a lot of work. However, you are a lot stronger than you think. I was at my, I thought I was going to die. And I got out of it. And the fact that I got out of it goes to show anyone can get out of it. You can get out of this. You have to know the resources and the tools of how to get out of it. And I think you have to be motivated to do that. Which is hard. It's hard to do that.
Yeah.
When you're suffering. I mean,
absolutely.
It's hard to do that when you're suffering. But I always think too, like, you know, OCD can ebb and flow. And my husband said to me, it was funny. I was, you know, I said to him, you know, back in October, I was like, God, I just want to feel better, you know. And he's like, Mare, it took you 8 months to gradually go down. He's like, you're not going to all of a sudden pop back and be okay. So I think for words of hope is you just have to allow yourself some time.
Yeah.
That would be my, which I don't love. I like everything to happen now.
Yeah. You know? Me too.
It's like, look, I want to feel better now. I want to do this now.
Yeah.
I want over now. I want reassurance now.
Yeah.
And that's not the way it works. And I think that's a big part of OCD.
Yeah.
It takes time.
It does. I agree. I think there's, I'm going to butcher the quote. I can't remember it, but it's something like, we, as humans, we overestimate what we can achieve in a week and underestimate what we can achieve in a year.
For sure.
So it's like, yeah, you know, however long it took you, in the grand scheme of things, actually, it wasn't that long. If you look back, like in 10 years' time, you look back and be like, that was such a small window of my time, felt massive. Yep. But you did so much in that time. Whereas we almost think in a week, okay, I can make massive differences. Maybe not. But in several months, you can.
Right.
Or years or whatever.
Absolutely. Well, that's the thing. I mean, I always say, like, you know, you want to lose a couple of pounds, you eat a salad, you take a walk, and you step on the scale, and you're like, why didn't I lose 15 pounds?
Yeah.
I ate a salad, I took a walk, you know, or, you know, I meditate for 5 minutes, and I'm like, well, aren't I supposed to be like all zen and stuff? Mm. No, it's a practice. And yeah. I think OCD, and again, I don't like to use the word recovery, but managing your OCD takes practice. And I think once you can master that practice, you can learn to live your life the way you want to live it. But it's hard. I mean, I still struggle daily. I mean, I have some hand washing issues still. I have to sit at the sink and say, you washed your hands, you don't have to do it again. Yeah. So that's the part that it just, you need a lot of time. I guess people have to be kind to themselves, more self-compassion.
Yeah, I agreed. Absolutely, yeah. Rome wasn't built in a day, to add another quote into the mix.
Totally.
Yeah. So the next question is, you can pick up the phone and call your 20-year-old self. What do you tell her?
Oh, my God. I had a lot of fun in my 20s. what would I tell her? That's a tough one. So I don't have any regrets. I'm trying to think what I would say. I would probably say to her, you need to embrace your confidence. You can be confident. I was pretty down on myself in my 20s. And I think this is a tough question. I'd probably want to say, you know, God, I don't know. I'm trying to think of like a way that to say, I was never confident in myself. And I would want to look back and say, you know, you can do a lot of things and not have to rely on other people, if that makes sense.
Yeah. It's just like, go for it a bit more, take more risks. Go for it.
I guess though, I mean, I went for it. I did a lot of things that, you know, I was really hard on myself too, I guess. I think I would probably say, don't be so hard on yourself.
Yeah. Okay, nice. Good message.
I don't know. That was kind of a crappy answer.
No, it was good. you got a billboard in upstate New York. What do you want written on that billboard?
It's super cheesy, but you're stronger than you think. I have realized that I am so strong because of how I got myself out of this. And obviously at the immense help of others, but I am stronger than I thought, way stronger than I thought. I mean, last year at this time, I could not get out of bed. And here I am talking on a podcast with Stuart Ralph about my recovery and how good I feel. And, you know, I'm present with my child and, you know, I'm present with my husband and I'm working and, you know, I'm going out to dinner tonight and going to a concert, and I went to Florida in February. Like, I couldn't do those things. It was funny. I got on an airplane and my sister was like, she texted me and she's like, you couldn't have done that 6 months ago. I couldn't have done it. I couldn't drive. So you are stronger than you think. And I think a lot of people underestimate themselves when it comes to that.
Yeah, absolutely. And also just how the brain can change. We feel broken or different. The brain changes. It can change, you know, and you're a testament to that. Lastly then, is there anything else you wish you could have shared today?
I think I just want, I would love for people to know, and I don't know if, you know, it's other people who listen to your podcast, if it's, you know, the majority of your listeners are OCD sufferers or people that don't have OCD, or, you know, when this episode comes out, I'm going to share it on my Instagram page so my people can hear about OCD. But I really want people to know that, number one, OCD is not an adjective. It drives me bonkers.
Yeah.
I hear somebody say I'm so OCD because I want to be like, I don't think you really understand what that means. And, you know, I know it's not malicious, but I want people to know, and I that this is debilitating and it does take lives, but it is also very treatable. And if you do what you're supposed to do, and if you have the tools and the books, because there are books, I have them all. I have all the workbooks. There are podcasts. There are people on Instagram to follow that you can get through it, and that, you know, this is a scary illness, but manageable.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Good way to end. Well, thank you so much, Meredith, for sharing your story and the bravery it takes. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this week's podcast. If you enjoy the OCD Stories podcast and would like to support us with a one-time tip/donation, please go to theocdstories.com/support. All tips, no matter how large or small, are greatly appreciated. Please subscribe and rate the show wherever you listen to the podcast. And thank you to NoCD for supporting our work. And if you want to find out more about NoCD, head to go.treatmyocd.com/theocdstories or click the link in the episode description. And quick disclaimer, guys, this podcast is not therapy. It is not a replacement for therapy. Please seek treatment from a trained professional. And until we speak, take care.